I'm Shirley Roberts, and you're listening to the Port of Solier radio programme on Boat Radio. Today I have the pleasure of talking to Rachel Fox in the square in Solier. Some people think we're a town, some people think we're a city, but that's a discussion for another day. Rachel and I go back a long way. We work together for the Mallorca Daily Bulletin. I write the words, she takes the pictures, and so we do a lot of things together. So we know one another quite well. And so it is a great pleasure for me to introduce her to you as a face of the Solier Valley and someone who's made her home and her being here. And she can tell this story much better than me, so I'm going to hand you over to Rachel straight away. Rachel?
Good morning, Shirley. Nice to see you again. Haven't seen you for ages.
No. Not since yesterday, anyway.
Yeah. I will say that, Shirley, you are the person that gets me into most trouble around here. This has been quite a big bit of trouble.
Oh, well, in that case, to introduce people to trouble, actually, that's one of my ambitions in life. So I'm glad I've achieved my ambition.
Yeah, no, I'm a grateful receiver, actually. I think you're a very good example of people that come to Mallorca and do stuff, which is partly why I'm still here, I think. I hope I'm a doer as well. I'm maybe an adventurer. It doesn't seem very exciting, a very glamorous adventure in that I move to another country and start doing things like laundry and so on, but that's what I'm doing. And I like interacting with people who get stuff started. And you know, you've got me going a few times, Shirley, on all sorts of things, including the photography and so on that I do with you for the bulletin. So it's a mutual appreciation society.
Absolutely, aren't we wonderful? Right, well, for the listeners around the world, we have to start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. So when did you come here first and discover the Solier Valley?
Just about exactly 13 years ago, I came to live here, but I had been to Mallorca twice before. Once I stayed up in Cala San Vicente, and the time after I came to Dea, both times with my sister. We used to do an escape from Britain for about a week round, it was around sort of the autumn half-term holidays, because I was teaching and she's a lawyer, and we would escape for a week to somewhere nice. And we loved Mallorca the first time. I think the tunnel wasn't built then, so we probably didn't really come through Solier, but we went the next time to Dea because my sister had discovered a hotel there. So we stayed for a week and we came into Solier, and I just fell in love with the area, absolutely. I remember standing outside the hotel on the little terrace there, looking down into Dea and thinking, people really live here. This is amazing. I'll cut a long story short about how I got here, really, but I came here with Ben, age 2, my son, who is now 15 and taller than myself, on an adventure in a way, leaving Britain, not on bad terms, certainly still have family there, my mother's still there, my sister's still there, but wanting something different from my life. I was living in the southeast of England. I would drive down the A14 on a Friday evening coming home from work. I worked in the water industry there. And I looked into the distance along this rather grey road with traffic and so on, the prospect of the weekend ahead. And I would look into the distance and just see clouds and think, maybe there are some mountains behind there. Maybe there's the sea behind there. Let's just pretend there is. Because really, I'm from the northwest. I've always lived within, you know, a stone's throw from the sea. And I've always loved the mountains, holidays in Scotland, camping and so on. And southeast England was pretty flat and pretty grey a lot of the time. And I needed the mountains. And I came here to the Tramontanas and I just thought, wow, I've got everything here. So I brought Ben. And a lot of people thought I was completely nuts. I didn't think it was such a brave thing to do, really. I just thought, well, you know, life's the same wherever you are. You've got to earn a living and you've got to enjoy your life, and you make the best of what you've got, so why not do it in a beautiful place as well? And I was very lucky at the time, because having eventually moved from the water industry into teaching when my son was, just before my son was born, I found that I had a career that was movable, a movable feast. And I was incredibly lucky to find a wonderful man called Barry Wiggins, you must talk to him someday, who is a musician and an educator and just an all-round fantastic gentleman, who employed me in his school at the time in Mallorca. He tells me on the basis of that I had once played the violin. And he said, right, you can come and teach in my school, but you have to play in my string quartet. So I said, okay. And I got the dream job. I got the dream job, which was part-time A-level biology teaching, so I could bring my son up on this island and earn a living at the same time.
I have to question you about the violin. I've heard you play the piano. Where's your violin?
Hidden away. Barry was very cross when I didn't play it much more than once. I did go to the string quartet here in Sawyer, but I'm dreadful at the violin. Absolutely dreadful. I was all right at once upon a time, but
so you got that job under false pretences. Then you only brought the violin out of the case to get the job,
more or less.
So you embarked at that time then on in a life in the international schools on this island.
That's right. Teaching biology. I've taught in two, though one of them changed the name to sort of three. Teaching biology, mostly A-level, but also a little, GCSE and a bit of geography once upon a time. That wasn't my favourite, but anyway. No offence to geographers. It was great. It was very interesting. The thing I loved about teaching was that I was always learning new stuff, even though it was about something that I thought I knew. My favourite years teaching was teaching chemistry, practical chemistry, because I didn't really like chemistry when I did it myself at school. So when I got to teaching it, I learnt how it really worked, and practically it was great fun, of course, with lots of bangs and smells, which you're not allowed to do so much these days, but I did then in those days.
But Rachel, that means you're a scientist. You've got an ology. You're a scientist.
Yes.
So science, how did science move into photography?
Well, I think I'd always been interested in photography, particularly when I was living in Liverpool as a schoolgirl, and then later as a student. There was a lot of regeneration going on in Liverpool, and I loved going down to the docks there, the Albert Dock, when there was the Garden Centre project and so on, and the whole regeneration of there. And I used to go around with my camera taking black and white photographs of the transition between the old dockland and the new dockland. I didn't have a huge number of photographs. It was expensive, of course, then. I had an old Russian Praktika camera, and I just did what I could when I could. As a student, I think somebody knocked it off a chair and it didn't work so well, and I left photography for a while. So of course, when digital photography came along, it was like red rag to a bull, so to speak. I don't know how science and, well, there are obvious ways that science and photography could go together, but I don't know enough technically. I'm not a techie person. I think, although I was always a scientist by job, there are things that I was doing that were more artistic, and I think really in some ways I not miss my calling, but I think I am more a creative person than a jobbing scientist. I loved my job as a scientist when I worked in the water industry, but I like the practical aspect, and I like going out, being outdoors, walking, boating, that kind of thing. So I think now the other creative part of me is escaping.
So the Solia Valley allowed all that to emerge then? That wouldn't have happened probably if you were still in the UK?
No, I think if I'd still have been in the UK, I realised that I would have gone back up north to somewhere like the Trough of Bowland, or somewhere where I would have been in a more rural community and nearer my parents, of course. My father was alive at the time before I left. So I'd have been closer to my family and closer to mountains, water, love water and boats. And then I would have been, the idea was I was going to be a writer. That was the other idea.
Well, you've still got plenty of time to be a writer, absolutely plenty. But I've got to bring you back now, because we have the lovely Ben, who's arrived here at the age of two and done all his growing up and is a wonderful teenager now. But there's another little man that's waiting to be told about too.
Little Aggle, yes. Little flonkers, as we call him. He's the child with most nicknames. He was sort of brown eyes, little Aggle. His father's Big Aggle, who's Spanish. So I've got one very blonde, tall, thin boy who's English, Ben, and then there's Aggle, who's half and half, and he's brown as a berry in the summer and a free spirit, and they're both very different. They're both pretty close, I'm very pleased to say. Agustin is now 12, so he was born within a year of me arriving in Mallorca. That's what the Mediterranean does for you, you know.
So there was a little love along the way then?
Oh, of course, there was plenty of that. I was married when not long after getting out here, and Agustin was born, and we're still on very good terms, and Agustin sees his father several times a week, so that's great. And Agustin was a great father to Ben here. Ben's father, he still sees him in England as well. So we have an extended family, which can get complicated. We have trips over to England and Christmas is here and there and so on. But I'm very, very appreciative of the children's fathers looking after them and being great dads to them. Yeah, the two of them here are Mallorquín. So Ben being two, he went straight into the local guardería and Agu followed him. And then they now go to the convent school here. Ben's in his last year, which I can't quite believe. We've then got to make some choices about where he'll go. But they both are soyerics, you know, they speak Catalan. Well, they speak Mallorquín. They speak Castellano pretty well. Probably some grammatical errors, but less than me myself, and English. And they have a wonderful vocabulary from that point of view. They get all these Castellano words, and if they're not sure what it is in English, they just translate it literally, and it usually is a pretty fantastic word in the English language. So they jabber on in whatever language, but if you hear them speaking Mallorquín, you know you're in trouble, because they think I can't understand, and actually, of course, they're right, I can't understand everything that they say. So they're usually plotting in Mallorquín.
That seems to be a feature of children that have this dual nationality. My grandchildren do exactly the same, you know, exactly that they, and when they're talking Mallorquín, they don't want you to hear. They are definitely plotting something. So we have then the two lovely boys. You live in the centre of Sóller, mm-hmm. and the teaching came to an end by your choice. What's next? What are you doing now?
Yes, well, after 18 years of teaching, I really felt that I needed to spend more time here in Sóller with the boys, because I found I was travelling to Parma and it was a strain on the purse, it was a strain on the energy, and I was been spending, although I really loved teaching, particularly at the end, I had the most amazing pupil, hello MJ, there in the world of criminology. But I missed that. But I just felt that I was spending a lot of time with other people's children and not enough with my own. So I started my own little cottage industry, which is laundry for rental properties. And it's grown like topsy, and now I'm waiting to open my own premises. I'm in the process. It's complicated. This is Spain, you know, but I'm getting there, and I'm really excited about this next phase, because I think I realised over the years, when it was in the water industry, I worked for a while in a commercial section. I was just interested in how businesses worked, and thought, it was like it was a black art. So I think, you know, my family were all academics in education one way or another. And I think we were sort of brought up with this idea that, oh, you can't run your own business. No, it's sort of, it was special, it was different, but it wasn't what we did, which was teaching and education. But so I just thought, well, I'd really like to give it a go. You know, it can't be that difficult, surely. And I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving finding out. I think that's what I like, just finding new things out all the time. And this is a whole new chapter to discover, really, and in a great place. With great people.
So trade industry and education, this is the debate. And some of it is a bit of a snobbish value, Rachel. I mean, is your mother worried about you washing someone else's clothes?
Well, you know, I'm a Lancashire lass, really. And she said, when things got tough, you know, she had to bring it laundry. It was right shame. My granny was from rural, well, not rural, from Lancashire, where the cotton mill, so strangely enough, I've come from one cotton mill town to another.
Clogs to clogs, less than three generations.
And I think there's a great irony in it that I'm doing laundry, but I love it. I think that I spend most of my time in the sort of, I wouldn't call it drudgery, there's the sort of yoga-ness about it. Hanging up your laundry, you know, you're doing a bit of exercise and your mind is set free from worrying about what am I going to
teach. What a Solya reek you've
become. I know, I'm out scrubbing my step as well, but it does give you time to think. And so I can think about what I'm going to be writing next if I'm good, because I am part of a writer's group and I'm really desperate to get that book out of my head. What photographs I can do. It's a real creative space, if you like, and that's the idea. The long-term plan is my laundrette will have... It'll be a social hub, Shirley.
I know.
You'll be down there. You'll be doing recordings there.
I'll be interviewing right there.
I was at a lovely little dinner party last night and I was talking about it and they're all excited. We've got to have the first writer's group meeting there. I've got people who are going to come and do craft shops and all sorts of things that are going to happen. And photography on the walls, of course, and art. And that's what I really would like. While I'm doing my laundry, people come in and have a chat with me about whatever. I think it'd be just idyllic.
Well, Rachel, I need to take you back into the world of blip photo, because this is where your writing and photography come together, and you are recording your life every day. Tell us the story of blip and how you got involved and what it does for you now.
Well, blip was effectively a web page started by a website started by a guy called Joe Tree in Edinburgh, and it started out as a sort of daily record of his life and his children and so on. It's slightly changed over the years in that it was taken over and then dumped again by Polaroid, and there are lots of sad tales there, but it's a community, it's an online community, a very, very friendly and helpful one, based on photography, but not really about photography. It's about recording your life and things that you see around you. And once you join and you get the hang of it, i.e. you take a photograph every single day, you pick one photograph to be a representative of what you've seen or done, and you write something about it. Or you don't write, it depends on how much time you have. And I have done it every single day now for the last 7 years. And it becomes a part of your life, and it becomes something that you don't necessarily think really hard about unless it's like your 1,000th blip birthday or something. Or sometimes you get the most marvellous photograph out of nowhere. Sometimes you write a lot, sometimes you write nothing. But it is part and parcel of what I do every day now. And it's a fantastic way of just sort of looking back on the years, how faces change, how terrible things happen and you don't write about it. Nothing happens and you write reams. It's funny what comes out and what doesn't come out. But I love it, and I've met some amazing people. And funnily enough, living in Solya, they really rather like to come out here and go, let's go and visit Rach, or Solya Girl, as I'm known.
Yes,
and they come and visit me.
Solya Girl.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, I'd love to get some more of my blip friends to come out and visit, because how incredible is it that the internet, every time I sort of spend a little time sort of trawling through there, how you can meet some incredible people. And I do get fed up about how people say, oh, all the people just sort of burying their heads in machines. But actually, I found photography and the internet as a way of meeting more and new interesting people and different topics and different ways to explore the world. Incredible.
I think we're only just really touching on the beginning of this. I mean, where we'll be in 10 years' time, considering where we were 20 years back on this one.
Yeah.
But for anyone listening around the world who has access to the internet, how can they access your blip photo information?
At the moment, the web address is www.blipphoto, that's blipfoto.com. But if you also just put in, my journal name is With Mountains Like These, or Solya Girl, it should come up on Google. I've got enough entries now to be Googlified. And also, I did have a blog at one point, so I think there's a link to that. But I've got to start that one again, Shirley. You'll have to help me there. Oh, dear. I get a bit lazy at certain things. I'm good at doing some things regularly every day, but my blog got a bit left by the wayside. I need more discipline in my life, Shirley. I do too many things and...
What are you doing currently, right now, in the photographic world? Are you contributing towards the art night for Solya that's coming up in August?
No, I keep meaning to do that, and previously I was always away in the summer when that event was on. I did I've had a couple of photographs in exhibitions lately, one for the Firo at Artesania down the road, and I did have an exhibition 2 years ago in one of the hotels in Deja, Esmoli. I'm not planning another exhibition yet because I'm really just concentrating on Project Laundry, Sayimoneta, my little lemon. That's what it's called. That's what it will be called. And so I'm thinking about I've got to have an interior to design there and so on, and photographs on the wall there. But at the moment, artistically, I've not got any projects coming up. It's mad busy in the summer here. You know, it's such a seasonal town from that point of view. So I'm just working my little socks off. And
so my little lemon is the laundry.
Well, Rachel's Sayimoneta. This was the boys' idea, in that we were playing with words and so on. And I really thought a lot of shops here have, and people have, a sort of nickname. So they won't be known by their surname. They'll be known by, it's like a sort of Cockney style as well, where you have somebody named after the thing that they do, Boots McCann or something like that.
Or Nick the Greek.
Nick the Greek. So the shops here have, you know, the chestnut or something, I think is an example, or the ant farm or something. Anyway, the shop has the nickname of the little lemon in Mallorquin. The idea being that the net at the end, which is the diminutive form of lemon, N-E-T, means clean as well. So the idea is it's clean little lemons, from which other lemons will grow. I don't know. Anyway, Mallorquins like the idea, but everybody else went, but how do we know it's yours? So it's Rachel's first.
So it's Rachel's lemons?
Rachel's Sayimoneta, Rachel's little lemon.
Right, okay. But basically, it's a laundry.
It's a laundry.
And a community centre.
Yes.
And an artistic space.
And I will take it as far as I can go, yeah.
and the location?
Very, very near the boys' school. So they can nip down to do their homework and nip out for lunch and so on. So I can keep an eye on them too.
As the location is very near one of the largest schools in the area, you possibly might pick up a few clients along the way.
I'm hoping that they'll drop off their kids and then they'll drop off their socks.
So, Rachel, to sum up your 13 years here,
yeah,
and the different places and the different things that you've done,
yeah,
I mean, do you think it's all led to this point, or what's next? Where are you going next?
Oh my goodness, I was talking about this last night, and every so often I've said, well, 5 years ago I had no idea I'd be doing this, and I can't now possibly begin to think what I'll be doing in 5 years, because you just never know. I've had various incidents, good and bad, that have completely changed the direction of my life. I think I'm one of those people that says yes to whatever and then filters the stuff out later on and goes, oh my goodness, why am I doing all these things? But I think that's my philosophy, is just say yes to everything, because you never know where it's going to take you. Fortunately, life brought me to Soyed, and I hope to stay here as long as I can. But who knows? Watch this space.
Well, on that note, I think on that enigmatic note, I'm sure if we have this conversation in 10 years' time, Rachel still will be sitting here, but she will have added another 5 things to her list of what she's done in that time. But the pleasure has been all ours. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shirley. Lovely to speak to you.